Let's get back to the action. The Rooten Report presents Nothing But Net, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Nothing But Net. I'm Dave Rooten, and we're brought to you, as always, by Dutchess Restaurants. Fresh food, serve fast. And we appreciate the support of Dutchess. If you made the decision on this frigid day to stay in and listen here, you made the right call. We got a lot to talk about, a lot to unpack. It was a real busy week, and it's going to be a busier week coming up. I know two teams that didn't decide to stay in are the Trumbull and Staples basketball teams. They're practicing right now, and I know this because I tried to get somebody from each team on for the show to look ahead to Tuesday, where I don't remember where we've had when we had two undefeated teams this late into the season, but Tuesday night in Westport, two 15-0 teams going against each other. I know it's getting hyped a lot in Westport and Trumbull, and we're going to add to the hype right now, and we got a lot of other games to talk about as well, and to do it and get coaching expertise as nobody else can do it. My co-host, Mike Walsh. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you, Dave? Looking forward to next week, and especially the Trumbull and Staples game.
Yep. I told you before, it's kind of, and we'll talk about this game after, but I had a fun afternoon yesterday because I actually went, I don't remember the last time I covered a Stanford-West Hill game, but you can make the point with the storyline. It was the most interesting game of rivalry weekend, Friday and Saturday. And I'll tell you what, I saw a lot of people yesterday. But my advocate days before I started the Rooten Report, I have great memories. And kids right now couldn't realize the kind of coverage we gave them and what they woke up to the next morning. But among the people, I saw one of your old players, Jarrell Plowden.
Yeah, Jarrell was on one of our state tournament teams, and a good basketball player and a good kid, and I hope he's doing well.
Jess Williams, member of the point guard at did you coach against Jess the year you coached girls basketball?
No, okay. She had graduated.
I can't remember. I have lost track of time, but she was there.
You have trouble remembering. I have a lot of trouble remembering. So.
And we'll talk after, but I interviewed Jordan Sutton for the first time, and I will say great kid, and he went off and scored 29 points yesterday. Outplayed the two West Hill guards in a 14-point win. So we'll talk about that game a little bit later. But let's start with Trumbull and Staples, and this is kind of hell week for Trumbull. They've got Staples, and then they got the team, boy, I don't even know. This team's all over the spectrum now. They go to Ridgefield on Friday, so they go play the teams that initially we had as the top two teams in the league. And I'd say number one and probably number three right now. You've played in regular season games like this, a lot of them. What's it like as you're getting prepped for a game like this?
Well, I mean, first of all, the fan base, the students, everybody's excited about it. And as a player, they're even more excited. You have an opportunity to, take the bragging rights at least until the playoffs. And, they work hard in practice, and I'm sure Staples and Trumbull are doing that right now. And to be honest with you, the game means a lot more than any other regular season game. But in retrospect, it's one game, and, the playoffs are going to be what counts. And they'll learn a lot about each other from playing this game. But involved in games like this, it's exciting. You want to get there, and, the fans are there. And I understand it's a sellout, or it's going to be a sellout. You have to ticket arrangements are being made where only the parents is that right? I don't know.
This is going to be a big problem because Staples gym is not big. For a school that size, I mean, you played in that gym a lot. That gym hasn't changed since I was at Brian Kelly's camp in the summertime. So if we want to go way back. But what they're doing is first parents have rights to tickets to make sure they get in, and then they're going to do an online sale. I said this to a couple of Staples people. I really hope Staples is like, of those remaining tickets, is holding back a couple hundred for their own fans, because I'll tell you what, this Trumbull student body is terrific. And if they're not careful, you don't want the crowd to lean into the road team's favor because Trumbull bought all the tickets. So I hope they're holding some back for Staples people.
Well, you're right. And the Staples gym is not big, but you can imagine the days at Trinity where we held about maybe 600, but it was almost impossible to get for like a St. Joe's and Trinity game or something like that. And so I'm sure the same thing's going to happen Tuesday night. But and keep it in perspective, though, as I said before, it's one game and a very important game to the players and the fans and everybody and bragging rights. But, you know, it's all going to come down to what happens in the playoffs, and they'll learn a lot from this game.
Would you agree with me, and I agree with you, I don't think the loser of this game is not hurt in any great way. We're probably looking at the top two seeds. They're right now look like they could be playing each other again. To me, the best thing about this game for both teams is that they're going to learn how to play. They're going to get the chance to play in a heated playoff-like atmosphere, and I think that's something that's going to be most beneficial to them when they get to March basketball.
No, I agree 100% with that, Dave. It's something that obviously you can't duplicate in practice, and to get into a game like that in that kind of atmosphere, to me anyway, it's the best thing for both teams.
And the other thing interesting about this game, and we've talked about Staples and being a juggernaut and could they go 20-0 through the regular season, they, on last Tuesday, almost got beat for the first time. In fact, Ludlow had a shot to win at the buzzer, a three-point shot that missed, but we talked about how Staples would do when they were tested, and they went to Ludlow and came away with escape with a two-point win. And that game was sort of all the perfect storm ingredients that we've mentioned that would have to happen for Staples to lose. They have a bad shooting night. The other team shoots well. The other team's defense matches theirs. All those things happened last Tuesday at Ludlow.
No, and they were able to do it on the road, too. I think that's important. They've played a lot of their big games in the past at home. And to go on the road at Ludlow when things aren't going right and to somehow pull out a win, I think helps them. And probably helps them going into the Trumbull game, especially since they're at home now.
No, I agree. I was going to say that game was perfect for them in that they got tested, they had to perform at the end, and they won. So they didn't suffer a loss, but they still got the experience of playing in a close game. And if Tuesday's game against Trumbull happens to be close, I think they'll benefit from it, and they're certainly going to benefit from it come postseason.
Yes, and to be honest with you, I think that the same thing with Trumbull. They went to Sacred Heart University and played St. Joe's, a tournament St. Joe's team, and they were lucky to pull that one out. I don't say lucky, but they were learned a lot, and what they had to do to be successful at the end there. They came back and won an exciting game against St. Joe's.
Okay, well, why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we can get into more of the X's and O's and what we see happening. And Coach, you'll give us some good insight into how you think the teams will play and what you would do if you were a coach in either side. You're listening to Nothing But Net on WICC.
Connecticut high school basketball lives here on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut, with Nothing But Net and your host, Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back, and let's talk a little bit more about Staples and Trumbull. Mike, I think we're in agreement about this. Two teams that are very similar. Each kind of has a lead player. Sean Wilson for Trumbull, Sam Klacko for Staples. Each team plays really, really good defense. Each team is really adept at moving the ball, finding the open man. Each team, even though they have a lead player, are really an ensemble and have four players averaging in double figures. And each is capable of winning each night because two of those four step up and they know they're going to get something out of their star players in different manners. Sean and Sam have been doing it in different ways. And in that respect, I think they're very, very similar, with the big difference being Staples is going to have a decided height advantage.
Yeah, I think Staples does have a height advantage. But I also think that Trumbull has maybe a little bit more quickness advantage, too. It's going to be interesting because, as you say, they're very similar teams. Both can get scoring from different places. But I think Trumbull relies more on Sean Wilson to be a scorer than Klacko at Staples, because Staples has more scorers. I really think that one of the keys is going to be the Lohman kid at Staples. He seems to shoot very well on his home court. He's shooting 53% from three. And when Klacko drives, penetrates, and kicks to him, I mean, it's 53% automatic that's going down. And that could be big. But the same token for Trumbull, Wilson, I mean, if you try to stop him, and he can go by you, but he can also kick out to his two guards, Tuhasi, who's having a really good year. And, I think that that makes him pretty similar. I think it's offensively, it's going to be an interesting matchup. I don't know who's going to – both of them play solid man-to-man defense, as you said. But I think the matchups are going to be kind of fascinating to me when I see the game evolve. I mean, who are you going to put on Sean Wilson if you're Staples? You've seen Staples a lot. Who would you put on Sean Wilson?
Who? The guy I'm thinking they might put on him, and to me, he's, I think, going to be the X factor in the game, and he's the least talked about best player in the league, if that makes sense, and that's Mason Tobias. He sometimes gets put as one of the other guys with Staples. You know, it's Klacko and one of the other guys. Tobias is not one of the other guys in a lot of respects. You could say it's a 1-2 punch. Actually, not in a lot of respects. I mean, he's leading the team both in scoring and rebounding at 14-7 and 7.2. And he's also averaging 3.5 assists a game, which I think is an underrated stat as well. That's seven more points or seven more points just on two-pointers. So, I think they might put Tobias on him. I'm not sure. I could also see them put Austin Hayer on him. I don't know. Hayer's a really good defender. You don't want to get any of your top players in foul trouble. What, you agree with me on Tobias?
In a way, no. I don't want to take my best rebounder from around the basket, especially if Wilson is outside. And I think with Wilson's quickness, just as you mentioned, it could get Tobias in some foul trouble.
I meant, do you agree with me? Do you agree with me that Tobias is like an X factor? You know, Tobias doesn't get the recognition he deserves.
No, no question about that. But I wouldn't put him on Wilson.
You know who? The more I think about it, I'm going to bet they put Hayer on him.
I think so.
He's a good defender. He's a good defender.
Yeah, and he's got some quickness. And don't forget, Staples gives an awful lot of good help on defense. And I think that, whoever you put on him, Wilson is going to see the help side, which, again, makes the other players and their ability to make shots more important, because Sean will kick out. He's not going to be selfish and try to do it himself. And by the way, I think that's something that has to be guarded upon by Klatko and Wilson. You know, when their team is in trouble, they can't try to win the game themselves. They have to rely on their teammates. And that's something that I think, for the most part, they've been doing a pretty good job of. So, you know, they'll do. I don't know. I have different thoughts on that. I think shutting down Wilson is going to be very difficult. I would try to make him work for everything he got, but I would try to shut down the rest of the team. If Sean gets 20-something points, good for him. I think we can score more points if I'm Staples on the other end. So, as I say, it's going to be interesting. Again, who does Trumbull put on Klatko?
That's what I was just going to ask.
I mean, he really is averaging like only 14 points a game. I say only, but he's averaging about 10 assists a game. Now, I'd want to keep the ball out of his hands as much as I could, but that's almost, it's very hard to do.
He's averaging 8.8 assists. How many times do you see a high school player 32-minute game without assist total?
Well, that's a tremendous assist total. And I had some good guards. I don't know if anybody averaged 8.8 assists per game.
I don't remember anybody with that kind of average. And when you factor in, you know, a lot of those are kicking out to, you know, Corrigan and Lohman for 3-point shots. You know, you figure in how many points between his scoring average he's accounting for as well, and he's also averaging 5.9 rebounds. So he's the most, yeah, the most versatile player. And as we saw last year, you know, when he had to play the two, he's not too bad a two guard as well. I don't know who I'd put on Klatko, but I think for Trumbull the big key is, like you said, Wilson probably is going to get his. Who's the next man up or next two guys up? You got Jaden Tuhays, who is usually their, I would say, their second best player. But you got Ryan LaMuth, you got David Bagley, you got Alex Roth, Josh Reed. All these guys, like the Staples guys, have stepped up at different points during the year. That's what's made these teams so successful. While they each have you know, one of the two best players in the league, they're not one-man teams, and you can't beat them by just shutting down one guy. And when you have three or four other guys scoring in double figures, you don't need all four of them to be hot on the same night.
No, you're absolutely right on that, Dave. And let's also throw in the coaching factor. You have two of the best coaches in the SEAC. Obviously, Buddy Bray's been around for a long time, and he won an SEAC a couple of years ago. Dave Goldshaw has done a tremendous job winning the FCAC last year and developing this team. So it's going to be a chess match between the two of them, and I'm really interested in seeing how they play the game and how it develops.
Would you use, if you were either of the coaches, would you ever think of going zone?
I like zone sometimes. I would change up at times, and you got to be careful though with the zones with especially Staples. I think that they shoot it so well on their home court from outside. So I would be hesitant, but I throw it in every once in a while.
I would throw it in every once in a while, mix it up. Would you do any kind of junk defenses at all? Would you box in one?
Well, to be honest with you, yes. I think I would play a what we used to call a. Not a boxing one so much as a 1-3 with a chaser. In other words, play a 1-3 zone and then deny the ball to Klatko, or in the case of Trumbull, try to deny the ball to Wilson. Yes, I would do that, but they're pretty much married to the man-to-man, in which a good man-to-man is just a great defense, and they're both pretty good at it. So, again, I think those two coaches do a great job, and yeah, I'm looking forward to see how they handle things.
I've seen each team probably three times each, I'm going to guess. I don't remember seeing other teams play any kind of junk defenses. I'm wondering if you try it every now and then just because they haven't seen it and see how they react to it. I mean, everything you do if the other team, you know, two possessions come down and score, you can jump out of it and go to something else, or just revert back to man.
No, I agree with that. I was a big fan of changing defenses. You know, even full court pressure and then back up. You know, as a different ways of playing defense. But again, they're so good man to man that maybe they don't have to. I mean, as I say, I really am looking forward to see what the coaches think. I'm interested to see if one team gets behind, you know, whether they'll go to a pressure type defense and looking to double the ball or something like that. But again, I think they're so good man to man that that's probably the way they're going to stay.
Has the fact what happened last Tuesday changed your feeling on the outcome? I still think there's a gap between Staples and the rest of the league. You know, it was I was making it sound like that. Well, I didn't know whether they were going to get a test like that. And I guess you got to figure on any level when you have a dominant team, they're going to get tested. They're going to have that off night. The fact that Ludlow played Staples tough, does that make you feel more like Trumbull has? Do you think Trumbull has a better chance to win based on Tuesday than you would have thought if Tuesday hadn't happened?
No, to be honest with you, because as you say, that you're going to have nights where your shooting is. And Staples relies on making that outside three-point shot. And they were unable to hit that against Ludlow. And Ludlow sometimes can be a tough place to play. You know, you're going to have those nights where you're not shooting. And I think that's the only way the Staples can get beat. They have a bad shooting night. And then I thought that at that time, sometimes you try to score too much, like Sam tried to do too much at times there, which, and he was able to do it and he carried him to victory. But, you know, you don't want to have to put him in that position. You want the other guys to make shots. And that's what happened, I think, against Ludlow. And give Ludlow credit, they played pretty good defense, too.
This is what I think is going to happen. You tell me if this is what you would do. I think they're going to pound the ball inside to Tobias a lot and let him pick up a lot of points in the paint.
Oh, I think definitely that's going to be their game plan.
That's what I think is going to end up happening. And yeah, I can't pick against Staples until I see somebody beat them, and I'm not here. I think, you know, we'll take a break in a second, but I got to give credit in particular to the Trumbull kids and Buddy Bray. Yeah, for this team to be undefeated at this point in the season, I thought the second place team, I said in our preview show, was going to still have 2-3 losses. And what Trumbull's done, Staples, I expected to do this. You know, what Buddy's done with this Trumbull team has just been terrific. I think him and John Daly have done the two best coaching jobs so far.
Well, there's a lot of good coaching jobs. I think Melzer's done a good job in New Canaan, too. And,
yep.
You know, I really think that with the case of Buddy Bray, that he's got a great leader. And a great leader, and Buddy does a good job, but a great leader can make your coaching decisions a lot easier. And Sean Wilson does that.
Okay, we're going to take another break here. We're looking forward to what's a great week. You're listening to Nothing But Net on WICC.
Expert analysis on all things high school basketball. You're listening to Nothing But Net with Dave Rudin. Live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back. And Mike, what a week for Trumbull. They get done with Staples. And then they got to go to the Great Northwest, up to Ridgefield, and a team that's becoming, I guess, a little difficult to figure out. I was going to go up to the Ridgefield Wilton game Friday, and then Wilton lost two more starters, two of their bigs, And Joel texted me a little bit about it and said, you know, we're going to have a rough time the rest of the year. And so I thought the game was going to be a 20-point game, which, well, as we will discover, it was. But I had a friend, a good friend who came in from out of town, and I was going to go up there to do a story on Ridgefield, which I'm still going to do. And I just said, you know, I haven't seen this friend in a while. The game's not going to be too close. I can have my photographer take pictures, and I can still write the story. And then I'm following, and you and one other person are texting me, and I find out it was a 20-point game, but it was Wilton that beat Ridgefield. And to me, that was the most surprising score of the season.
Probably, definitely most surprising score of the season in my mind. Joel down two big men, and you know, especially up at Ridgefield, where generally the Tigers are a pretty tough team to beat. They just had a bad night, I think, shooting-wise, and their defense let them down a little bit, giving up 77 points to Wilton. I'm not taking anything away from Wilton, but that's not usually how Ridgefield plays. They're probably solid defensively. And, you know, they just had a bad night. And unfortunately, that happens sometimes. It's good for Wilton. A good comeback win for Wilton, by the way, after losing those two guys in the game to St. Joe's out last week. But I'm sure the Andrew will get him back on track. And, you know, Trumbull, regardless what happens Tuesday, is going to be in for a tough game against the Ridgefield on Friday.
Is Ridgefield the second best team in the league?
Well, right now I'd have to say.
I'm sorry, the third best team in the league. Third best team in the league.
I would say so. I still have confidence in them. They have an inside game in Foley and an outside, a really great guard in Genova. And, you know, they have some other people around them that can be productive. It's just one of those things where they got behind and they kind of took some shots that aren't Richfield-like. And, you know, but the biggest thing to me was the defense. I couldn't believe that Wilton was able to score 77 points on Richfield. And I'm sure that Andrew will straighten that out.
But you said that this isn't – you've been saying this isn't the same defense of Ridgefield team, that their defense is not what we're accustomed to each year.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think that they have been as solid defensively as they've been in the past. That's been their trademark. And, you know, it's not an easy fix, especially halfway through the season. And but if anybody can do it, I think Drew can do it.
Well, it'll be interesting when we're talking next Sunday, when we're going to have both those results in, and that should be illuminating. Let's jump over to a game briefly discussed at the top of the show, and that was Stanford-Wilton. And it was sort of billed as the big man of Stanford, Jordan Sutton, against the dynamic duo in the backcourt for West Hill, Anthony Stephen and Daquan Turner. And I'll tell you what, Mike, I as somebody who, two of us who've been saying, get the ball to Sutton, get the ball to Sutton, it took a couple minutes into the game, but Jamari Atkinson, who you know, you were on my ride up to the game, was talking up, he hadn't played up to what he's capable of in the games I've seen him this year, but two straight possessions, just threw the ball up there because he knew you know, Jordan would get it. And two quick baskets that got him started. He had eight in the first quarter. Atkinson had five. And except for about a three-minute stretch in the second quarter when West Hill made a run, it was a dominant performance by Stanford. And they came away with a 60-46 win in a game that, not just for the rivalry, but was really big in the standings because they were both tied for sixth place coming in.
Yeah, no, excuse me, no question about it. You know, but Stanford should dominate with Jordan Sutton in the paint there. And I'm glad to hear that they threw the ball up to him and got him started in the beginning of the game. And he ended up, I think, with, what, 29 points? He should dominate. He should dominate not only against West Hill, but against other teams. And I think if Stanford starts to learn that, they're going to be successful and be a playoff team that could be dangerous.
Yeah, and the other big key to the game besides that was Atkinson. And he scored 17 points. I don't know how many assists he had, but he had 17 points. And he's the one that kind of set the tempo with getting the ball inside. And when I talked to Dan Latour after the game, he said, you know, everybody was billing the game as guards versus center, and I don't know how you couldn't bill the game that way. But he said, you know, to him, we've been discounting Atkinson. If Atkinson plays like that, Stanford's an entirely different team. If you're getting Sutton the ball that often, and Atkinson is providing secondary scoring and getting a lot of assists, Stanford's an entirely different team.
Yes, and the thing about West Hill, though, is that they have the two really good guards. And I think I just saw the last quarter of it, and the game was over by that time. But even there, it looked like Sutton defensively was making them change their shots and making it difficult for them to score. So, you know, he does things on both ends of the court. I mean, he has a tremendous amount of talent that, you know, to me is going to be keeping on. Is going to improve as he gets on and gets more playing time and better and different coaching. You know, so it's important for Stanford High the rest of the season to continue to be successful in getting him the ball and using him on defense. And you know, what's still to me is, as he said, an interesting story. They have the two good guards, but again, you know, they have to get some people around them to help them win and make the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. Turner finished with 23 before fouling out, and he was really distraught on a charge call. He had a lot of shots. The trajectory was changed and altered by Sutton's reach, and he missed shots that he normally does. And he could have put up 35 yesterday if it was a normal shooting game for him. I don't know that still would have won the game for him, but it would have been a lot closer. And then they did a really nice job, Stanford, on Anthony Stevenson, holding him to 4 free throws in the second half and 13 points for the game.
And again, you know, we keep talking about offense and getting the ball into Sutton, but I think Stanford High's defense is the key to how successful they're going to be this year. Because when you can funnel everything into the middle to Sutton and he changes shots and block shots and rebounds, they're a much better team. And, you know, that's all on their other 4 players to, you know, continue to play good defense.
Okay, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, I have to briefly address a little Twitter exchange at the start of the week on the state tournament. I told Mike I'd have a minute or two to talk about this, and then we'll look at around the league a little bit more. You're listening to Nothing But Net on WICC.
Game recaps, athlete interviews, and everything high school basketball. It's Nothing But Net with Dave Rudin, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back, and I'm not going to make this a rant, but I do want to address this because, last Monday, Monday's usually my writing day from home. I catch up. I write a bunch of stories. It's my work from home day. And I don't even know why I did this, but for some reason I decided to look at the Division I, the rankings, and how many teams were under 500. As everybody knows, I think you know how Mike and I feel about the state tournament. The system, and particularly Division I and the 16 teams, which are supposed to be the 16 best teams in the state. And I sent 3 tweets out, and they're not long. I want to read them, and I think it's important when addressing this that tone matters, and you don't get accusatory, and you don't get all riled up about it. So I put in, of the 16 teams in the Division I field, 5 are under 500, 1 is winless, Two others have one and two wins. Another is one game over 500. This happens every year. Honest and reasonable question. How is this good for Connecticut high school basketball? Last year, Manchester had a dream season, winning the Division II tournament with a senior-laden team and 24-2 record. Because of this, it was bumped to Division I. It is currently 0-12. Should the best 16 teams in the state be determined prior to the season? What am I missing? This, too, happens every year. For those who care about the sport, how does this make our state look good? How are we giving players, coaches, schools, and fans the best experience possible? Should this not be reevaluated? Are possible improvements not obviously simple? And Mike, after I got the CIAC on its account, responded to me, and a couple of points, and the one that really kind of made me depressed. I'm pretty certain I know the person behind this, and it's somebody I like a lot, somebody I consider a friend, and I still like a lot, and I still consider a friend, but we don't agree on this. But he said to me, and I'm trying to find where I have it here, about the 16 teams. First of all, he said that, you know, they haven't heard a word from Manchester this year about their placement. Well, what is Manchester supposed to do? Manchester's going to say, we don't like this. I say, okay, we're going to bump you to Division IV. And he said, the part that really got me is that every year there's a couple of teams that throw everything out of balance, and it's just because those couple of teams. But those couple of teams are all in Division I, which is the only reason we do this tournament different than the others, is to get the 16 best teams in there to have a dream event and also to address the schools of choice and the advantage they have. So, I mean, yeah, nobody's arguing about who's in Division II or Division III or Division IV. Division I's supposed to be your showcase. You set up a tournament to have the best teams, and now I'm wrong for saying that it's only a couple of teams. I mean, we're just beating our head. It's just frustrating because this just seems so common sensical to me, and it's because we do care. I mean, if we didn't care, we wouldn't address it. But I just don't know how you could say you could have a tournament with the 16 best teams and determine back before the season starts, you already know who those 16 best teams are.
Well, just one comment there, not to beleaguer what we've been talking about for years, is, you know, I'm surprised that you got an answer. They must read your tweets, which is encouraging. But, you know, they have to realize that every year this happens, and Manchester's not going to complain, because what are they going to complain about anyway? They're in Division One, and you know, that's the way it is. But every year this happens. Bristol Central, the year that Klingon graduated. And I'll go back to West Hill when they had to play East Catholic and didn't win a game, same as Manchester. You know, but the bottom line is they do have the top 8, 9, 10 teams in Division One.
That's barely half, over half the field.
Yeah, and they're going to go to Mohegan Sun, and it's going to be a sellout crowd. Everybody's going to get excited, and you know, they're going to say it was a successful tournament. But is it really a successful tournament when Windsor, who's undefeated and really one of the great teams, I think, in the state of Connecticut this year, and McKenna Smith, they're not in Division One. My only thing, and I keep telling this every year, is wait till the end of the year and then determine who are the best 16 teams and put them in Division One, and then you'll have a true Division One tournament. Right now, as you say, it's broken.
Yeah, it's really too bad. Again, it's for me, it's diminished the state tournament. And yeah, you're still going to get the big crowd. You're still going to get the same money coming in from the gate. And the other thing, which is another factor in this too, is after these tweets, I got a text from somebody, I guess I'll identify as somebody heavily involved in sports in the state. And he said he heard from the Notre Dame of West Haven coach, who's curious why they're currently right now, they would be the sixth seed in the Division I tournament. with all their losses out of state, and they're winning in state by over 46 points a game. For those who don't follow the state, Notre Dame of West Haven's even a bigger favorite statewide than Staples is in the FCAC.
Yeah, no question about it. And that's why if you wait until the end of the year and then seeded them, I guarantee you that Division One would be Notre Dame and West Haven as the number one seed. But, they're happy to get everybody to Mohegan Sun and have a great time and make a lot of money. And, who cares if Manchester gets beat by 80 in the first game they play?
Yeah, you know, I 16 teams is not hard to seed at the end, and there's a couple of ways to do it. And you could get an impartial committee to do it. Excuse me. And we would have an unbelievably great tournament, and you would have some S teams that would get a chance to play against the double L's, and maybe you get some Hoosier type moments. So it's unfortunate, and it's probably never going to change. You know, Mike, one thing is, as we kind of finish up here, and you made note of it, you've stressed it the last 2 days, but we don't get the big crowds as often at high school games, but the additional great thing about the rivalry weekend is all the crowds were really, really good, and that's something that you've been pointing out. That's not me. That's from you.
Exactly. I get to see a lot of the games on the live stream, and even if it's like Norwalk McMahon, the place is packed. And obviously Wilton and Ridgefield and Ludlow and Ward, the fans come and the students come, and it's great atmosphere. And I'm sure the kids are excited to play in that kind of atmosphere.
Let's a minute or two, and I was on him right from the beginning, and as you told me, and my car right up here, I'm right. East the divisions mean nothing, but outlook overall, tied right now, third best record in the league, New Canaan, 8-2, 12-3 overall.
Yes, I think you said it, and it's important to understand. They have three players who are really solid basketball players, Chandra and Verdon and Sapione. And Danny hasn't played well together and mixing, but important to talk about close games and winning them. They've won like three or four really tough games.
They won at the buzzer Tuesday night. A really nice inbound play.
Well, coming back from an 11-point deficit, too. And
against West Hill.
That creates a lot of a good environment, and they're going to be a tough match when they get to the playoffs.
Yeah, we talked about Tobias being maybe the most underrated, certainly one of the most underrated top players in the league. Henry Chandra's in that category, too, and him and Tobias maybe one, too, and he's really come on. And Danny's the other thing, Danny's developing some depth. He's got a couple of players he can bring in off the bench. This is going to be a team I wouldn't want to play in the postseason, because they can win both games. They have won close games. They're pretty talented. I said at the beginning of the year, I just thought there were too many players for them not to be good. Danny said they're going to be a second half of the season team, and they're hot right now.
Yeah, and that's what you need to be toward the end of the season. You want to be hot, and they're on a streak now. They have a tough game coming up too, I think, with Trumbull the following week. So it's interesting to see as we get down the stretch where this is all going to shake out, and who's going to be in the playoffs, and. It's going to be exciting as we go forward, but nothing probably more exciting than looking forward to Tuesday night in Westport.
Yep, I'll be there. I think I get myself in, and I know you'll be watching the stream. And this is going to be a big week. We're gonna shake up the standings. We have right now nine teams would be in the tournament right now. When you look at a tie for seventh, eighth, or ninth. and there are two teams a game out. So as we said right now, that we thought there'd be somewhere between 10 and 12 teams contending for tournament spots, and we got 11 right now. So we're going to know a lot more about everybody, especially up top next Sunday, Mike. So thanks a lot.
Well, I'm looking forward to this weekend and next Sunday to breaking it all down again.
Okay, everybody, that's Nothing But Net, brought to you by Dutchess Restaurants. Fresh food, serve fast. Stay warm, enjoy the Super Bowl, enjoy a big week of games. We'll see you again next Sunday.